Yes, I am at Temple University now. I must not have done my biography in years. But I will be switching gears. I'm not talking about food. I will be talking about workplace wellness programs and specifically how the federal law what I believe is too flexible to actually implement change. There's a growing consensus that workplace wellness programs could really address chronic disease and healthcare spending. And so it's with that in mind that I say this presentation. And it's also based on a paper that was just published in American Journal of Public Health. So if you want more information, please take a look at that. I have no any relationships or conflicts. So the background of this presentation is that in 2010, the chronic disease accounted for about 30% of total health care spending. And we all know that in 2010, the Affordable Care Act was passed. The Affordable Care Act revised the law for workplace wellness programs. And then the Departments of Labor, Health and Human Services, and Treasury also revised their regulations for workplace wellness programs based on the revision to the law. The workplace wellness programs provide a targeted setting to really reach employees. The goal is to reduce absenteeism and provide a supportive environment and to hopefully facilitate health changes and also financial positive financial impact for the employer. The real goal is to address the growing healthcare costs and lost productivity based on chronic disease in the country. And one meta-analysis found that for every dollar spent on wellness, medical costs fell over $3, and productivity increased, and absenteeism costs fell over $2. And there are a lot of research also noting that some programs are not evaluated. So this was based on large employers that do evaluate their programs. So workplace wellness programs are, the definition is that they're programs offered by an employer to promote health or prevent disease. They can be two types. They're participatory and health contingent. Participatory programs either do not require any kind of reward, or there's no reward, or the reward does not require the employee to fulfill a health-related standard. An example would be a reimbursement for a gym membership. Health contingent programs, on the other hand, are contingent on satisfying some kind of health outcome, and they do involve a reward. They can be activity-only or outcome-based. And activity-only programs just require the completion of an actual activity, such as a walking program, in order for employees to receive an award. And outcome-based actually requires the maintenance or attainment of a health-related standard, such as stopping smoking or maintaining a healthy BMI. For the most part, more large businesses engage in workplace wellness programs, and also most of them are participatory. But it's very important to note that about half the workforce is employed by small businesses. We need to encourage smaller businesses, but also there are a lot of employers that might be interested in workplace wellness programs but really don't know where to start and how, or have any kind of guidance on what would work and what they should be doing. And I think that some of the failing in the regulations could be fixed and help this situation. So briefly, I'm going to talk about participatory programs, and then I'm really going to get into health contingent programs. But there are some problems with both for the regulations, the way the regulations are worded. So participatory programs have almost no requirements on their use. They must be offered to all similarly situated employees, such as all full-time employees. There's no requirement that it's effective. The most common type is a health risk assessment, and that can be a biometric screening or a health risk questionnaire. So the most common workplace wellness program in the country is a health risk assessment participatory program. For both programs, both types of programs, the regulations equate the term reward with positive reward and negative penalties. Now, this can be a problem because at some point the penalty could be so great that it becomes not voluntary anymore. And there have been several lawsuits on this topic of employees feeling that they're being forced to participate in these types of programs because the penalties are so high. And Hawaii had a bill that I wish passed that would have addressed this issue. It would have required workplace wellness programs to be voluntary by ensuring that rewards were positive only. Now, health contingent programs, on the other hand, are really different. They have 5 requirements for their use. The year must be an opportunity to qualify for the reward once a year. The percent of the reward can only be a certain percentage of the total cost of your health care coverage. They must be reasonably designed to promote health or prevent disease, available to all similarly situated people, and there also must be, the program must be disclosed, but there also must be a reasonable alternative for people that can't physically participate in the program that the employer set out. I'm going to focus on the third requirement for the rest of the talk, the reasonable design requirement. Now, reasonably designed is also defined in the regulations. It has to have a reasonable chance to improve health or prevent disease, not be overly burdensome, not discriminatory, and not engage in a highly suspect method of preventing disease or promoting health. So this is kind of the definition. Unfortunately, the departments specifically said that they're not requiring evidence-based standards. They would love for you to use them, but they're not requiring it, and they specifically say this is an easy standard to satisfy. Now, why would they do this? They said they want to be very flexible and give employers the opportunity to innovate, and so this is their whole rationale, providing flexibility and encouraging innovation. However, we know that health contingent programs are not being widely used, so this flexible standard has not created a shift in employers using health contingent programs. And the other unfortunate thing is in the 2006 regulations, which the departments refer to again, they actually sanction the use of an aromatherapy class as a method to fulfill this. Now, nothing against aromatherapy, but it's clearly not going to be preventing disease or addressing chronic disease or health care costs. So it's kind of not the purpose of having a wellness program or even putting a revision of the wellness program in the Affordable Care Act, which had such a broad goal. Some states are trying to address this. For example, New York says that if a program offers incentives, the provider must demonstrate that it can be result in good health and well-being of the group based on actuarial science, which is great. And Colorado goes a little further that says it has to be consistent with evidence-based research and best practices, and that plans must be accredited by nonprofit outside groups, which is great. But what ends up happening now is that employers who have employees across the country have to comply with different rules, and I'm not suggesting at all that we should be preempting states from doing this, but the federal requirements need to be readdressed. There's also a potential for litigation. So ERISA provides a private right of action, and one of the laws that were one of the regulations the departments changed was ERISA. Now, this has not happened yet in the health contingent context, but as I mentioned, in the participatory context, there has been litigation. So here's the concern. You could either say that the reasonable design requirement is so lenient that it really that an employer can easily pass this test, and if an employer is sued, then there's really no issue. But the flip side of that is that the plans are required to not be overly burdensome and not engage in highly suspect methods, and reasonable people could really differ on what that means. There's no definition for the definition of reasonable design. So if their studs go to court, I could see that these are factual questions that a jury would have to decide, and it's not very good for employers to be in front of a jury, to be honest. So who knows what's going to happen? But it's just a warning. So I would argue, despite the title of the panel, we need to move beyond wellness. We need to actually think about health and addressing chronic disease, and support evidence-based research and programs. This would also help the smaller employers that don't know where to start. And so I have a few suggestions. The first is that We look towards the Community Preventive Service Task Force, which created the guide to community preventive services. They actually evaluate the efficacy, costs, cost effectiveness of community interventions, including workplace wellness programs, and they look at it from both the health and financial standpoints. So the government has what I would say is two choices to support best practices. The first is to actually have a certification process for these task force recommendations, and then we would actually have a body of literature that would enable employers to have plans to choose from. Or the second method would be to have a third-party accreditation process that's a nonprofit entity. There are entities out there that do accredit these types of programs. They don't evaluate them to the same extent as the task force does, but they do accredit and have requirements for evidence-based. And then I would argue that if an employer does follow the whatever government rule it chooses, that this would provide a presumption against ERISA litigation, so they would not be violating ERISA. And then, of course, not only do we want to have best practices, but program evaluation is a core public health issue that is not required and also is really in the best interest of employers, not only to see if their programs are effective for the employees, but also to hold the providers accountable. You don't know what's going on, and a lot of the research is showing employers are very happy with their workplace wellness programs, but they're not actually evaluated, so they don't have any clue whether it's having any kind of different impact on their employees or their finances. So that's all. I thank you, and I want to thank the Vitality Institute for funding this work as part of their broader support for a Commission on Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention and Working Age Americans, and I will look forward to your questions. Thank you.